WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. President Biden reacting to the International Criminal Court issuing an arrest warrant for Vladimir Putin for war crimes in Ukraine.
Well, I think it's justified, but the question is, it's not recognized internationally by us either, but I think it makes a very strong point.
The Kremlin dismissing the announcement by the ICC, calling the warrant outrageous and unacceptable. Laurel police are hoping you can help them track down the person who shot a 15-year-old girl in the ankle yesterday afternoon. It happened on Londonderry Court around 1:15. She was taken to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. This came hours before a 15-year-old boy was shot in Northeast near a D.C. recreation center. Police also looking for whoever pulled the trigger there. A small chunk of Metro's busiest rail line is out of service this weekend.
The closure involves just two stations, Rhode Island Avenue and Noma Gallaudet. The stretch between them will be closed as new fiber optic and radio cables are installed to improve communications. Metro will provide free shuttle buses to fill in the gap, running every 5 to 10 minutes. If the bus is your jam, you'll face some challenges today as well. With the Rock and Roll Half Marathon and 5K races being run, 24 Metro bus routes detoured from 3 in the morning to 4:30 in the afternoon. Some Metro access service will be impacted as well. John Matthews on WMAL and WMAL.com.
If you're driving down highways in Maryland, you may notice something's missing. All that garbage on the side of the road. You've probably seen all sorts of things there. Shoes, sofas, mattresses, random sweatshirts, half-eaten sandwiches. But now, there's less of it. For the last few weeks, the Maryland State Highway Administration's been getting rid of it as part of Operation Clean Sweep. Spokesperson Charlie Gishler says it's been a success.
We've collected more than 120 tons of debris on state roads. So that's a heck of a milestone.
One reason they're doing it, so crews can safely start mowing roadside grass. If you're thinking of adopting a new pet, you'll have plenty of choices. Some shelters around the region have seen a 50% increase in new animals over the last 3 months compared to the same time last year. They're offering deals to entice you to come in. Loudoun County Animal Services Director Nina Stively.
We want them to find homes as soon as possible. The shelter is very full. We have a brand new facility, but we are at capacity when it comes to dogs. So if someone wants to adopt, please come to us.
The shelter's waiving adoption fees on animals older than one through tomorrow. Fairfax County Animal Services offering adoption fees from $5 to $25 through tomorrow. And the Prince George's County Animal Shelter is waiving all adoption fees until the end of April. WMAL Sports pulling off one of the biggest upsets in NCAA tournament history. Farley Dickinson stunned top-seeded Purdue 63-58, becoming the second number 16 seed, to defeat a number 1 seed. Maryland plays Alabama tonight. The Wizards fell to the Cavaliers and the Caps defeated by St. Louis. Traffic and weather next on WMAL. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Mike Franciotti in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Starting in Maryland, that earlier issue we had along the outer loop as you move past the BW Parkway, that has cleared. Looks like all of your travel lanes are open. No problems between the beltways, Interstate 95 and the Parkway, both moving well. The I-270 corridor between the Frederick County line to the lane divided back moving well. Route 50, the John Hanson Highway, looking good. No issues on the beltway in the Commonwealth. 395, Interstate 95, as well as Interstate 66, all moving well. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL StormWatch 7 forecast.
For today, we are not below freezing. Temperatures in the low 50s, breezy northwest winds around 15 to 20 miles per hour. Sunday afternoon, we're looking at highs in the low 40s and freezing temperatures to start. Widespread 20s expected by tomorrow morning. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
Right now, 42 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now, on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
WMAL. Hour two of the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi is with us each week. He is the White House correspondent and chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Good morning.
The banking crisis, a lot of connections of President Biden, not only in his current role as the president, but as a senator from Delaware, where many of the banks and credit card companies headquarter. What is the very latest as the White House attacks the issue of these banks failing around the country?
Well, the latest issue is that the government has not bailed out the delinquent banks yet. Late Thursday evening, 11 of the largest U.S. banks in the country came up with $30 billion to invest in First Republic Bank, which was the first near casualty after the fall of Silicon Valley Bank earlier in the week. Jamie Dimon, the head of J.P. Morgan Chase, led the way, rounding up 10 of his colleagues in the world of big banks, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup, and depositing $5 billion each, along with Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley putting in $2.5 billion each, followed by PNC, Financial Truist, BNY Mellon, State Street, and U.S. Bank, only $1 billion. This prevented the bank stops from tumbling to their demise, and it meant that the depositors' money would be solvent for now. But there are ominous signs about this. The private sector stepped in for now, but it's also banks such as Diamond's, J.P. Morgan Chase, that will benefit from higher interest rates. The Fed looks very likely to raise interest rates, according to Chairman Jay Powell, and Mr. Diamond himself predicted there would be increases on CNBC, but quickly added, not as many as I had hoped. We'll see if this changes. One other point that should be made about this. First, looking in the future, Credit Suisse, one of the top European banks, suffered a few tremors as a result of this. This is something that should be watched carefully. Credit Suisse is the eighth largest bank in the entire world. And if they're getting nervous, well, a lot of depositors around the country should be nervous. Second, Silicon Valley Bank had 95% of its deposits that were uninsured. These mostly came from true risk takers, private equity operatives, and venture capitalists. In other words, the true gamblers in the horizon of American business and investment. Now, all of these people say hosannas to Ron Paul and Ayn Rand and basically promote the libertarian view, leave us alone, don't regulate too much. Yet when they make a wrong move and endanger what other depositors have put in, well, the answer is government, bail us out. And one can see TARP just down the road a little bit. This story is not yet finished, but it looks like we're past the danger point, at least for the weekend.
The president has assured us that the taxpayers won't be on the hook for any of these bailouts, but I can't imagine that these large banks would take $5 billion each out of their shareholders' pockets. I'm going to assume that at some point we're going to see some increases in fees or credit card interest rates or something down the line. So whenever you hear this, oh, it's not coming out of your pocket, I'm not so sure about that yet.
Well, of course, business has many different ways, as you've named, Rick, of passing the cost of a mistake they've made onto the consumer. In other words, us guys. Simply the Fed raising interest rates means that the banks are going to get back some of what they have invested. And, of course, interest rates on credit cards going up are likely to benefit the banks, as we always hear the argument, I have no cash. Overall, this story continues, and it should undermine the confidence that most Americans have in their bank, and it should make people look a little closer at who's on the board of directors and making decisions for their banking institutions.
Let's turn to the decision for 2024 on the Republican side. Ron DeSantis has been out on a book tour, a.k.a. campaign tour, and has not taken the bait when it comes to President Trump. However, President Trump's been a little more aggressive versus his potential competitor.
The nicknames are getting a little harsher, and of course, he's now criticizing the shoes that the Florida governor wears, saying that they have lifts on them, and Governor DeSantis may not be as tall as he says he is. He also said Governor DeSantis has inflated the figures of the sales of his new book. Now, that said, people would probably prefer a rich discussion of issues and not hear this kind of invective, which can get personal. Nonetheless, that's Donald Trump's style, giving nicknames that are just withering. He's done for a long time. And my guess is it's going to continue this way. Governor DeSantis behaves very much the front runner, even though the former president leads him in many polls among likely Republican voters. But he's staying the course, which means stay away from Donald Trump. This is going to be a pattern we'll be following for a long time. And guess what? We're a year away from the New Hampshire primary and the early bird nomination sites.
A lot of questions about who was behind the bombing of the Nord Stream pipeline. There was some light shed on it at the National Press Club recently.
Certainly. Earlier this week, I saw Seymour Hersh, the former New York Times correspondent, known as a muckraker, Pulitzer Prize winner, and on his own journalistic venue now, Mr. Hersh said that Americans were behind this, that trained demolition officers from Panama City, Florida, which is a fabled site for Navy training, were responsible, that they went out in a boat with a doctor, as required on missions like this, and took out three of the four parts of the Nord Stream pipeline, which brings Russian oil and gas to Germany. In other words, the U.S. was responsible, Hersh feels, for making it impossible for Germany to depend on Russian oil and hence not be blackmailed by Russia into not supporting Ukraine. Well, not so, says the Wall Street Journal. On page one of its Friday edition, investigative reporters said that this was the work of possibly a Ukrainian-owned company in Poland that leased a private yacht and went out and did the deed itself. I might add that the rented yacht, the Andromeda, is 50 feet long, has a single mast, and is normally used as a pleasure boat. They are saying it's the work of Poland, possibly through Ukraine itself. Hersh says it's the United States. In any event, this has all been embarrassing for the government of German Chancellor Scholz, and it's very likely that it's going to make him a lot weaker in the future. For now, Germany moves away from dependence on Russian oil. There is political invective being thrown like shrapnel in Berlin, and this story will continue.
John, the acronyms are dominating the news these days. We just heard of all of these speeches at CPAC, and there were a couple of speeches at MEK recently. And tell us about MEK and what was said.
MEK is considered the largest group of Iranian expatriates in the United States. Most of them were opponents of the Shah of Iran and are now sworn enemies of the theocratic regime in Tehran. They trace their political heritage back to Mohammad Mossadegh, the elected prime minister who was deposed with U.S. assistance so the Shah could return to power in 1953. They held a forum Thursday of opponents of the regime, and these included retired Marine Corps Commandant Jim Jones, who also served as President Obama's National Security Advisor, John Bolton, former ambassador to the United Nations and a Republican, and Joe Lieberman, former Connecticut senator and 2000 Democratic nominee for vice president. The common denominator, they said, is that with the recent assault by the Iranian government's security police on women who were protesting the death of Miss Amanini, a 22-year-old who allegedly did not wear the headscarf required of women in public, that this is going to lead to the downfall of the Ayatollah and the Iranian regime within a year. I might add that this event was held on Thursday, which is the Iranian New Year, Nasrov. All three said that the assault on women was just enhancing the ranks of protesters and that the regime was ready to go down. Now, what follows is uncertain, and again, I'd like a dime for every time an opponent of the Ayatollah said that the revolution will occur. My guess is that we'll hear a lot more of this, but it will only take continued violence by the regime against innocent people to finally spell its doom.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. As always, John, thank you, sir.
Always thank you so much. And we'll come back with more figures and more complex news next week.
7:20 Saturday morning update on WMAL. Cheryl Atkinson coming up next, but right now, Mike Franciotti's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Starting in Northeast D.C., westbound or outbound Benning Road at Minnesota Avenue. Got a report of a crash there. Also in the district, Rock and Roll Half Marathon kicks off this morning. There are road closures and parking restrictions already in place along Constitution Avenue, Rock Creek, and the Mall. Major highways around the DMV doing well. No reported issues on the Beltway, both in Maryland and Virginia. And looking good along the George Washington Memorial Parkway at this early hour. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com. The WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
Cooler and breezy for your Saturday. Temperatures into the low 50s this afternoon. Wind gusts up to around 20 miles per hour. And then tomorrow we're tracking cold temperatures. Cold alert for us here at 7 News with a hard breeze to start. Temperatures at 28 degrees. The coldest they've been since February 18th. Rebound highs only into the low 40s with breezy northwest winds. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
38 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:21, the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Cheryl Atkinson joins us, an Emmy Award-winning investigative journalist. And, of course, she hosts Full Measure. That's tomorrow morning, ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. Cheryl, good morning.
Good morning.
We've certainly seen and heard about alleged improprieties at the highest levels of the FBI, but you have a report tomorrow on whistleblowers at yet another federal law enforcement agency.
Well, we're talking about the oldest one, I think, the U.S. Marshals Service, which I think we love much of the work these agents have done over the years. Back, we're talking from the Wild Wild West days to all the folklore about their involvement with the mob and taking down mob figures. But like a lot of organizations, unfortunately, there may also be a darker side to this storied agency, and it has to do with its treatment of whistleblowers or people who don't like some of the internal behavior going on. And Sunday on Full Measure, Lisa Fletcher is going to report on this for us. Two whistleblowers, a woman who worked at the U.S. Marshals Service and her supervisor who tried to help her as she tried to call attention to what she saw as some serious bad practices. But instead, as in many of these cases that we report on, they got retaliated against, according to their story, rather than these problems being taken care of inside the agency.
The Biden administration has been under fire, of course, as the southern border crisis has raged out of control. The administration has said repeatedly that they are advancing new technologies, but the only thing I've seen that's advancing is the numbers of illegal immigrants coming across the border. Henry Cuellar is a representative from Texas, a Democrat, and he's been quite vocal, and you're going to spend some time with him tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, he's from a border state and a border town, of course, so he is usually not on the same page as the Biden administration when it comes to border control, because he thinks it's been wildly out of control. He's been urging the Biden administration to do more things to stop the flow of the record illegal immigration. And we asked him to sort of give us not only the status of where things stand today, because we keep hearing, okay, President Biden finally visited the border. He's talked about some new policies. What are they? What do they mean? And I found out some interesting things. There are some sort of arcane parts of the law that are going to be going out of effect soon. Some new ones that may be used more that actually Representative Cuellar thinks may make some difference in terms of who's coming across and how many. So far, you know, I looked at the numbers last night. There's not any big change. There's still huge record numbers overall. But where they're installing some controls over some countries like Venezuela, it looks like the numbers are lower. So it's a little bit complicated, but Cuellar makes it very easy to understand in our interview Sunday, where we ask him about the status of what's coming at the border.
We hear a lot about the smugglers. We hear a lot about the drug cartels. But we don't get a real inside look or personal look at the immigrants themselves and the journey that they have to make. And I think you cast some light on what they go through.
Yeah, you know, I went to the border and spoke to some of these families and sometimes single adults as well who had just come across, most of them across the Rio Grande. Some of them lost loved ones on the trip who died. It's super perilous and dangerous. You hear about that, but it's absolutely true. And you'll hear their stories personally. And, you know, what really strikes me is, of course, I was interviewing the people who are not presumably the drug dealers, the rapists, the criminals. There are plenty of those coming across as documented in Border Patrol records. But these are the people seeking asylum or just a better way of life because of what they go through in their own country. And it struck me that we're encouraging them to go through this terrible journey that, you know, you'll see in my story, one couple says they would never do such a thing again if they had known what they were in for, witnessing deaths and rapes, and there were kidnappings and money, just what they go through. And we're making it possible by, you know, making them think the border is open. It's inviting them to come. It's making the human smugglers they have to pay rich beyond these cartels' wildest dreams, richer than they ever have before. And then they can count on us, they meaning the drug thugs, they count on the United States and taxpayers to finish the job, to transport these people to their final destination, free to the cartel, but at great expense to, again, to U.S. taxpayers. So it's really a sad tale, but we're going to hear firsthand from some of the people who have just made that journey.
Those stories are tomorrow morning, ABC 7, 10 o'clock, and there are more stories if you go to CherylAtkison.com. And there's stories that you probably won't see in the mainstream media. Check them out at CherylAtkison.com. As always, Cheryl, thank you, and have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks, Rick.
7:27 now on the Saturday morning update. Coming up, we'll talk with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland. Stay with us on the Saturday morning update.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Chinese President Xi Jinping expected to visit Moscow next week to talk to President Vladimir Putin as the war in Ukraine continues. And that's not the only world leader he may be having a conversation with. President Biden's indicated he also wants to speak to Xi Jinping.
President Biden, who always insists diplomacy is the best way, has been teasing a phone call with Xi ever since he ordered the Chinese spy balloon shot down over U.S. airspace. Something else that could be on the agenda for that call, if and when it happens, Chinese-owned social media app TikTok. Biden's Justice Department now suspects TikTok parent company ByteDance of spying on Americans and stealing their data, something the company seemed to acknowledge. Quote, "We have strongly condemned the actions of the individuals found to have been involved, and they are no longer employed at ByteDance."
Fox's Jillian Turner. Three Loudoun County residents arrested on arson charges. Marco Manjarres, Elizabeth Caudill, and Adrian Larrazabal were arrested on Thursday in connection with a fire that was intentionally set at the former clubhouse for West Park Gold Club in Leesburg on January 23rd. WMAL Sports, Fairleigh Dickinson beats Purdue in one of the biggest upsets in NCAA history. The New Jersey school becomes the second number 16 seed to defeat a number one seed. Coach Tobin Anderson tells SportsCenter,
"We didn't just surprise them. We outplayed them, a very good team, an unbelievable program for 40 minutes. And that was pretty incredible."
Maryland plays Alabama tonight. Up next, traffic and weather on WMAL. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Mike Franciotti in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
All the major interstates around the DMV doing very well. No problems on the Beltway in Maryland. Interstate 95 and the Parkway between the Beltways showing no problems. No travel lanes blocked along Route 50. In the district, DC 295 looking good. No problems inbound or outbound along New York Avenue. Southeast Southwest Freeway looking good. Outbound Benning Road at Minnesota Avenue. Accident activity there. Beltway in Virginia moving well. 395, Interstate 95, Interstate 66 at this time all looking good. Now from Garage StoreRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, partly sunny, windy, highs in the low 50s, right now 41 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
7:36, the Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, the co-host of the Thought to Action podcast. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to be here.
All right. We saw the Russian takedown of a U.S. drone over the Black Sea. Republicans have criticized the administration's response, or lack thereof. Headline at Newsmax, Tony Schaefer to Newsmax. Biden took a knee on Ukraine. So put all of this in context for us. Should we have had a stronger response to the drone takedown, or is there something behind the scenes we don't know? Because
no,
I've gotten in more trouble for running a red light than Russia got for shooting down a $32 million drone.
Well, rightfully so, Rick. I mean, you know you can't be trusted at red lights. But with that said, no, I think it's very clear that if you look at the series of reactions, everything from the lack of a credible and cohesive response to the drone to the abandonment of the Abraham Accords in the Middle East, not really keeping the momentum going and therefore allowing the space to be occupied by the Chinese, by Xi. And he's very active in that region now with the rapprochement they've made between the Iranians and the Saudis. It's a series of things that just make no sense unless you have someone at the top who's essentially taken a knee or, you know, taken a powder, whatever metaphor you want to use to say that Biden is not actively engaging, and he's not actively engaging as a policy decision. The drone, let's start with that. That was an authorized mission by the Pentagon. It was to go in and try to test out how far to go in. It was in with its transponders off. I've talked to at least two people who have confirmed, yeah, it was in there to kind of look around and do collection on tactical communications and get a look at some of the ships near Crimea. And obviously they did not anticipate, I think, such an aggressive response. With that said, once that response happened, the Pentagon's kind of very subdued response was because the White House said, don't make a big deal of this. That there you go. And then beyond that, then you get into the whole issue of now there's this 12-point peace plan that the Chinese have put forward. The U.S. finally, days later, I mean, over a week, finally said, yeah, we're not going to go along with this. Rick, they're always behind. And to me, you can't be, it's either you're completely an idiot or you're doing it on purpose. And, you know, arguably anybody listening to this within the sound of our voices will kind of discern what's going on there in Washington. And I think it's the latter. I think this is a decision they're making to not respond adequately, to give up that space, and nature abhors a vacuum. So someone's going to fill that. China's moving right into it.
I get the idea that you don't want to create World War III over a drone shootdown, and you know, you've got some aggressive cowboy pilots maybe on the Russian side, but maybe. I would have thought that, you know, somebody could have at least said, well, we're gonna invoice them for the $32 million, or just say something.
Well, that's part of the point. The way they took it down was the equivalent of a dog raising its leg on a fire hydrant. That was Cold War language. They did it in a very obvious, in-your-face way. There's a half a dozen ways it could have brought it down. We would have not even known how it went down. I mean, there's ways of making it so that we didn't even – it's like, oh, it went down. We don't know why. No, this was meant to send a signal. This was in-your-face. This was meant to say we're very displeased with what you're doing, and we're going to basically raise our leg on your drone. That's what they did.
All right, let's turn to the arrest warrant that has been issued by the – ICC, the International Criminal Court, on Vladimir Putin. Obviously, you know, it's going to be pretty tough to put handcuffs on him. But how significant is that in the world order for Vladimir Putin?
Right. So this is going to be one of those situations where I think it's all symbolic. The audience may recall this has happened before. Slobodan Milosevic was another world leader indicted by the World Court, essentially the International Criminal Court, for his so-called war crimes in Bosnia. He was actually arrested, brought to The Hague for trial. He died in 1999 before the verdict could be achieved regarding what he did or did not do. But the only reason that happened, Rick, is because we, the United States, jumped in and helped do that. We were doing all sorts of capture of Bosnian war criminals behind the scenes during the late 90s. War court, the ICC, has no authority beyond its, you know, walls. And you've got to have someone go do it for them. And at this point, obviously, I think Biden even has said yesterday when he was getting on his helicopter to go to Delaware, we didn't sign up to these things, which means that he's really not going to be acting to enforce them. And at this point, nobody's going to be able to go into Russia to grab Putin and bring him to quote-unquote justice. So I think one is very much symbolic and not much behind it.
I couldn't believe Biden played that down as much as he did.
I couldn't either. I know. It's like, okay, you're the guy I've been bugging everybody to do this. And it's like, yeah, we're not signed up to it.
We're not signed up to it. So, you know.
That goes to my point. It goes to my point that we started with. He does this all the time. It's like they're all enthusiastic, want to do something. It's like, yeah, okay, no big deal. He's not consistent. And I think the inconsistency is because, first off, you know, he knows nothing's going to happen on this Putin thing. And secondly, you know, I don't think he's really got his heart in it. He goes out and says what he's supposed to, and little gems of honesty like that come through. It's like, yeah, it's no big deal. We're not going to do anything about it. So,
all right. Slovakia and Poland will be sending MiGs to Ukraine. Probably not going to make a big difference, but symbolically, how significant is that?
So, well, they're going to send four. They're supposed to send a total of, I think, in the 20s, I think 20-something. And, militarily, it's something that can be used and helpful. But like we talked about last week, Rick, some of the weapon systems that are being used in the battlefield, nothing's going to stop them. And this is much more symbolic than anything else. And the symbology is like, it's not good because they've been talking about this for almost a year. It's like, the Polish wanted to send these things last summer. And it's like, oh, yeah, no, we have to work with the United States. The United States was supposed to allow them to be flown to Germany. Then we, the United States, would facilitate getting them into Ukraine. Well, the United States decided not to do that. So, again, our folks jump in, the policy folks of the Biden administration jump in to stop it. And now here's happening all this time later. And, again, is that what you do if you're trying to win a war? Do you just turn things on and off constantly and make it more difficult for the people you're supposed to be supporting to win? Because that's what they're doing. And this is another example of that. So symbolically, Rick, it looks pretty stupid that they wanted to do this almost a year ago, and here they're finally coming through with only four. So,
well, I think one interesting kind of technical note is that if we'd sent in fighters, there would have been a lengthy period of training for the Ukraine pilots. But they're already trained on these MiGs, right? So they can go right to work with them.
That was the whole idea of sending them last summer. Yes. The Ukrainian Air Force was largely made up of Russian-built weapon systems, to include fighters. The May-29s are Russian-built, and obviously during the Cold War, Poland was on the Warsaw Pact side. So Poland also had a lot of Russian-made weapons. The MiG-29s were an example of that. So, yeah, the idea was, hey, you guys are already trained. We don't need these. We're trading these in for American aircraft, that is the Poles. You can have them. And obviously we, the United States, stopped, you know, jumped in and said, oh, not so fast. And, again, it's like, why did you do that if you're trying to win? But, yes, you're correct, and that whole premise is correct. And, yeah, I think they'll be able to jump into these MiG-29s pretty quick and get to using them. But, again, you know, 8 months late.
And we got about a minute or so left, Tony.
Sure.
When it comes to the meeting on Monday with Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping, what do you anticipate may come out of that in terms of any commitments to Russia?
So the Chinese have already committed pretty much everything except obvious export of lethal weapons to the Russians. They're doing everything behind the scenes. Look, they've already bailed out the economy. The Russian economy is bouncing back. They're doing BRICS. They're doing all these other economic things together. So they're already doing a ton of things. What I see coming out of this is a renewal of China saying we want to go with this 12-point peace plan. And what I think is more important is I think Xi may well go see Zelensky and tell Zelensky, have I got a deal for you? You need to go along with this plan, and we'll make it worth your while. And, again, that will put us in the backseat because the Biden administration has already said we're not going to go along with the plan. It'll be a real slap in the face, Rick, if all of a sudden Zelensky says, oh, I'm going to go along with the Chinese because they're going to broker a peace. But I think that could be in the cards. So just saying.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, catch the Thought to Action podcast at LondonCenter.org. Tony, thank you so much.
Thank you.
7:46, Saturday morning update. KT McFarland next. But first, Mike Franciotti's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In the district, we've got the Rock and Roll Half Marathon kicking off this morning. That means plenty of road closures, parking restrictions, most notably along Constitution Avenue, Rock Creek and Potomac Parkway, as well as the Mall. All the major interstates at this time doing well. No problems on the Beltway in Maryland. I-270 corridor, Route 50 moving well. 95 in the Parkway between the Beltway is looking good. Going into Virginia, no problems on the Beltway. The main lines of 395, Interstate 95 moving well. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL StormWatch 7 forecast.
Cooler and breezy for your Saturday. Temperatures into the low 50s this afternoon. Wind gusts up to around 20 miles per hour. And then tomorrow we're tracking cold temperatures. Cold alert for us here at 7 News with a hard freeze to start. Temperatures at 28 degrees. The coldest they've been since February 18th. Rebound highs only into the low 40s with breezy northwest winds. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
38 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:47 on the Saturday morning update.
Washington's best way to wake up. O'Connor and Company with Larry O'Connor. Weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on WMAL.
Saturday morning update continues, 7:51. I'm Rick Fowler. KT McFarland joins us. She was President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor, a board member of the American Conservative Union, and she has authored the bestseller, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, good morning.
Good morning.
We saw the drone incident with Russia earlier this week. As to Ukraine, whether we go deeper into it on a U.S. strategy, there's no real consensus between the Republicans and the administration on that strategy moving forward on Ukraine. KT, what do you see as the status now and the options?
Well, the forever war wing of the Republican Party wants Biden to respond by sending more lethal weapons to Ukraine. A lot of people in the Biden administration want to do the same thing. Weapons Ukraine could use to escalate the war into Russia proper, or even start, you know, involving American forces. Meanwhile, China's supplying Russia with weapons. And the national debate seems to be sort of stuck in two polar opposite places. Either walk away from Ukraine and let Russia prevail, which isn't a very good option, or get more involved with supplying more lethal weapons to Ukraine and perhaps even U.S. military involvement until Russia somehow gives up and walks away. Those are two unrealistic and very bad options. But I think there's a third option, which is what Reagan did with the Soviet Union. That's how we won the Cold War in the first place. Bankrupt Russia. So they can't continue the war. So they can't, you know, wars are expensive. And the way to do it is right within our grasp, and it's to stop Biden's war against American fossil fuels which will drive the prices of oil and natural gas down, and Russia, which relies on energy exports to pay for this war, they're broke. I mean, there's a reason that Putin didn't invade Ukraine during Trump, and it's not just because he was afraid of Trump. It was because Putin didn't have the money to do it. Under Trump, the U.S. produced and exported oil and natural gas. We were not only energy independent, we were energy dominant. Now, that's the key word, dominant, because it allowed us to set the global price, and we drove down the price. It was simple, supply and demand. But when President Biden came in, the first thing he did was he changed that. He said, no, we're going to declare war on fossil fuels. And so we stopped producing. And then, predictably, the global prices skyrocketed. And energy exporting, Russia got windfall, unexpected windfall profits. And what's Putin use that windfall to do? Pay for his invasion of Ukraine. And the sanctions that Biden and the European Union have put against Russia, I mean, that's nice, but they haven't done anything. Russia's economy is doing just fine, even better, frankly, than the British economy. And Russia's selling the same oil and natural gas that it would have sold to us or to Europe, is selling to China and India and Turkey. And I really am concerned that we're walking into this very bad place where there are only two options to this war. And I'm all for doing the third one, the Reagan way, the middle way, bankrupt him.
All right, I want to turn to China. And we know that the President Xi Jinping will be in Russia on Monday to meet with Vladimir Putin. And he is expected to meet with Volodymyr Zelensky. And this is not the only major move that China has made recently on the global world stage when it comes to other major players that we used to kind of take the lead on.
Yeah, and this is really the most upsetting thing of all, is this caught us all by surprise. It's not a surprise, but it's caught Washington by surprise. We're so consumed with this domestic debate over proper pronouns and our cultural civil war. Meanwhile, China's taking advantage of that, and it's moving quite swiftly to establish the new Chinese world order. You know, just last week they brokered that historic deal between archenemies Iran and Saudi Arabia. Well, then suddenly China's the major world power in the Middle East. For 50 years, the United States has been the dominant power in the Middle East, shaping events to our liking. Now China's there. All of a sudden China has not only an endless supply of oil from Iran and Saudi Arabia and also from Russia, but China will probably build the 5G artificial intelligence infrastructure in much of the Middle East. And so they're kind of winning economically, technologically, while we're still talking about being our military presence in the region and the forever wars for which we have nothing to show. So here's Xi Jinping kind of running rings around the Biden administration on diplomacy in the Middle East. And then next week, tomorrow, Monday, he goes to Moscow. And reports are, as you said, he's going to either meet with Zelensky, probably video conference. I don't think he's going to go to Kyiv. But anyway, Xi Jinping has a Ukraine peace plan on the table. And there's a chance he could try to broker that peace deal, too, by pressuring Russia to the negotiating table. Remember, he has a lot of leverage over Russia because Russia needs Chinese weapons to continue this war. Russia has the money to pay for it thanks to the Biden energy policy, but he doesn't have the weapons, and China would have to supply him with that. So China has a lot of leverage to force Putin to the table. And then, you know, he can also do to Ukraine what he's just offered to Iran and Saudi Arabia. I'll build your 5G network, and then you'll have artificial intelligence capable of doing your infrastructure capability. So you'll have digital infrastructure, which is the wave of the future, and China will build it. So all of a sudden, China is right there in the middle of what we looked at as an intractable war between two lousy options, and China is potentially going to offer a third way. And so what they also did, which to me nobody paid a darn bit of attention to, but Xi Jinping has just this past week, he's proposed a global civilization initiative. And, you know, you read it, and it's all sorts of stuff about, you know, respecting countries and civilizations and their own governance and their own cultures. But it was really aimed at two places. One, it was aimed at the United States, saying, United States, you bluster around the world forcing everybody to try to be a democracy. Look what you tried in the Middle East. It didn't work. And it's also aimed at the global South. Now, that's the Southern Hemisphere. It's going to be the biggest area of economic and technological and every other kind of growth in the next 20 and 30 years. And Xi Jinping and China plans to dominate that. They already own a lot of Africa. They want to be the dominant leader of the global south. And so we didn't pay a whole lot of attention to this speech, but all of a sudden the rest of the world says, wait, they're in the Middle East running events. They potentially are going to be in events, controlling in European events, and the war in Ukraine. And now they're going to be a global world leader. The world looks at this and says, America, you're a declining world power. You're torn apart by civil culture wars and nothing to show for two decades of forever wars in the Middle East, and your economy has stopped growing. China looks like the rising superpower, and it has every intention of quickly replacing the United States globally, establishing the Chinese world order, and frankly, never has a superpower fallen so fast and so far as the United States under Joe Biden.
Katie, if you know folks at the State Department, would you call them and wake them up over there? I mean, I get it with the Biden administration, but even the State Department, you know, back in the Obama administration, we used to see that, you know, we were leading from behind. Now we're not leading at all. I mean, it's crazy. Katie McFarland, President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor and the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. Katie, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick. I enjoy it very much. Thank you.
Our pleasure. And that's it for the Saturday morning update. Garden Sense this afternoon at 1.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.